and in his training. You can either be the center of attention or pay attention. You can't do both. The mood had shattered, and Evan wasn't about to let someone else set the new tempo. He pressed his advantage, spinning as he addressed Montesco's men. "Why are you all here? Who's watching the front gate, the rear perimeter? Who's guarding your posts around the house? Or did you forget we still have Gulf Cartel assassins out there gunning for Hefe? Go. Go!" They dispersed. Evan looked at Angelina. "Get back in your room. Clean up your boyfriend. Both of you stay there. I'll deal with you both after I finish my job in the morning." As he headed back to his bedroom, he slapped the disposable phone into Darling Boy's hand. "Excellent work," he said. Chapter 53, Filthy Boy. Evan spent the morning pretending to check Montesco's fleet of SUVs for digital transmitters and explosives. Darling Boy sat in a lawn chair beneath the portico with Rodel, sipping lemonade as Evan moved back and forth to the van, hauling undercarriage mirrors and RF wireless signal detector wands. Every time he emerged from the cargo hold with a new piece of gear, Darling Boy made him bring it over to him to inspect. For extra fun, Darling Boy would ask the chauffeur's approval.
"That look okay to you, Raudel?"
"Yo no sé,"
Raudel would reply with a smile, biting off a fresh plug of tobacco and spitting a brown stream across the toes of Evan's boots.
"Let me see it again."
On the sixth round, Darling Boy finally seemed to tire of the power play and waved Evan off.
"Hurry up and finish. You haven't even started on the tunnels yet."
Evan kept on with his examination,
assessing every inch of the SUVs. As he worked the undercarriage mirror on the third and last one, he heard a ragged cough from the chicken coop, repeating like a sickly leitmotif. After a time, he stormed over to the bars.
"Shut the hell up!" he shouted.
Aurora recoiled from the bars, stumbling back into her cellmates who caught her, murmuring in Spanish. Passing the wooden pillar with the skeleton key, he hurled the undercarriage mirror against the wall.
"How am I supposed to work with you hacking over here?" he shouted, banging the bars. "Knock it off! You have plenty of water!"
Back on the porch, he could hear Darling Boy and Rodel chuckling.
"He's got a bad temper, this gabacho."
Evan leaned on the bars, lowered his voice. "The mirror snaps off. Don't look right now. The arm will reach the key. Wait until later." Aurora eyed the undercarriage mirror with its extendable arm, barely within reach through the slot in the barred cell door.
"How will I know when to do it?"
"You'll know."
He made a show of spitting on the ground at her feet and returned to the van as Darling Boy and Rodel applauded him. Climbing into the cargo hold, Evan used his heel to crack the dried blob of gum on the floor. It hid a small flush mount ring pull, which he fished up out of its housing and used to lift a hidden hatch door, revealing the storage cabinets beneath. The small items he needed for this phase were waiting right on top. He pocketed them surreptitiously, eased the hatch closed, and moved a pelican case to cover the eyelet. Back to the SUVs. With his scanners and wands, he had every excuse to climb through the interiors, search the undercarriages, check the steering columns. He finished his work there, returned to the van and loaded the fusion sensors, micro-surveillance tech, and basic tools into a black duffel. Dusting his hands, he approached the portico, already counting his steps from the van. 30. 35. Darling Boy rose.
"Put the bag down. There."
Evan obeyed. Crouching, Darling Boy searched every last item, holding each one up to the light, turning them this way and that, examining them for anything untoward. Then he patted Evan down once more. Raudel watched with satisfaction, blowing Evan a kiss. But there was nothing hidden on Evan's person or in the gear.
"Inside," Darling Boy said, leading the way. "Tunnels next, but I will watch your ass like a hawk."
Evan followed him into the house, still counting. 45. 50.
Montesco was waiting on his feet in the study, arms crossed in front of the aquarium tank, spine straight, as if expecting someone to come in and paint his oil portrait. Before him, the grand desk with its blank blotter, fancy fountain pen, and white residue from three snorted lines. In the bluish water behind him, what remained of Venustiano spun listlessly. Nacho sat on the black leather couch, cradling a Glock 19 and trying to fit his lips over his teeth.
Are my vehicles clean?
Montesco's eyes were puffy and dark, the rest of his face pallid with drug toxicity. Yes, Evan said, entering just as his step count neared 300. I scanned them stem to stern. No explosives, no digital transmitters, no listening devices. He chinned at the duffel bag slung over his shoulder. I'm ready to move to the escape routes. Where do I access them?
Eat, Montesco said. There is just one, and it runs straight from here.
He kicked aside the saddle leather wing chair behind the desk. It slid to the wall, nearly toppling. He snapped his fingers, and Darling Boy peeled up the frosted PVC chair mat to reveal a circular wooden scuttle hole cover in the floor. It had an inset metal ring not unlike the one installed in Evan's van, which lifted to reveal iron rungs descending into the earth below. Evan said, "After you." But Darling Boy just smiled.
"I'll wait for you here," he said. "Have fun."
Montesco rubbed the heel of his hand into his eye and trudged out.
"I'll be in my room. Don't wake me till it's done."
Evan took hold of the rungs and lowered himself, the duffel tugging at his shoulder. No more than 3 feet in diameter, the hole bored right through the foundation and into the sweating soil. As he eased down through the floor, Darling Boy's boot slid forward and caught him beneath the chin. A tilt of the toe cranked Evan's head upward.
"You come back here every hour, understand? Exactly 60 minutes.
Evan jerked his head away.
"I understand.
If you don't,
I'll come looking for you."
Darling Boy stepped away. The light of the aquarium played over Evan's face as he descended, the corpse's intact foot twisting as if pirouetting. It was the last thing he saw before semi-darkness swallowed him. 20 feet down to the dirt bottom, where he was greeted by a naked light switch mounted on a crooked 2x4. He clicked it, a string of Christmas lights pegged to the walls at intervals illuminating the long, dark way. He peered up to see Darling Boy and Nacho staring down the hatch at him. He couldn't imagine two less palatable faces. Something soft brushed at his ankles, a rat scuttling for cover. A deep inhale brought the scent of mud and musk. The cramped walls forced him to walk in a half stoop. He started his step count over from zero. The tunnel was long and bare. It seemed a vector beneath the house, an endless trek through patchy darkness. Now and then, roots curtained down from the low ceiling, dragging across his shoulders like limp hands. His room zone showed no signal, as he'd anticipated. He was disconnected from everything down here in the underworld, able to prepare and scheme. 55. 60. It was a good quarter mile to the first ladder up. A blade of light leaking through the hatch above brought visible a slice of the subterranean tunnel. He dumped the duffel at the base, sending a sheet of rats squealing and scurrying. Then he removed an electric torque screwdriver with flathead and Phillips attachments and kept going. He resumed his count, his boots mashing through mounds of rat droppings. 175. 180. Another ladder led to a hatch he hadn't noted from above, likely somewhere near the portico. He passed 200, wondering how much his count was thrown off by his stooped gait. Was he overcompensating or undercompensating? When he crossed 300, he started to worry. Had he miscalculated? Or was Montesco lying about there only being one escape tunnel? 325. 330.
And there, finally, another set of vertical rungs hammered into a concrete throat ascending to ground level. His heart quickening, he scaled the ladder. The hatch at the top opened with a simple thick slide bolt. It gave with a rusty thud, the lid lifting up to let in a spill of daylight. The lid rose to a 45-degree angle and stopped, striking the undercarriage of the van, giving him just enough room to access the hinges of the lid. Flathead screws, 3 per hinge. Wedged in the vertical concrete tube, clinging to a rung with one hand, he had barely enough leverage to get the screwdriver into position. A trickle of dirt from the flower bed ran into his eyes. His hand cramped. For a moment it seemed he'd be unable to make the angle work. But finally the first hinge screw extracted, clearing the housing and tumbling past his cheek to the soft ground below. The next came easier. His technique evolved enough to make the second hinge give way quicker, but he had virtually no angle on the third. Goosenecking his hand, he tried to worm the flathead into position, but needed another half-inch clearance. No go. With his right heel dug into a rung and the sole of his left boot braced on the opposing wall, he tried again. He was perspiring, his grip slick. If he slipped, he'd wind up with a twisted ankle or a broken leg, and he could afford neither. He shoved the lid harder up against the undercarriage of the van, but there was no more give. Was it possible he'd come this far to be undone by a half inch? Removing the flathead insert bit, he set it between his lips, but as he did so, the screwdriver unit slipped through his palm. He lunged for it, missed, his grip faltering, boot fighting for purchase on the far wall. His right heel gave, bumped painfully down another rung, and then skipped into open air. He tumbled 2 feet in near free fall before exploding outward in a show of panicked centrifugal force, jamming himself in place at a painful angle. Metal bar dug into his shoulders, both feet hammered into the wall opposite. Somehow, miraculously, he'd held on to the bit between his lips. He reset himself on the rungs, scrabbled back up to the top. Pinching the bit in his bare fingers, he inserted the flathead into the screw slot. He twisted. Nothing. He tried again, knuckles straining, hand knotting all the way through the palm. Still no give. A half fucking inch. His forearm was burning now. One thigh getting in on the action, his body tired of spidering him in place while he worked. At last, the screw loosed a quarter turn. Not much, but enough to give a bit of air around the head. He dug his fingernails in place around it and twisted until his skin frayed. At last, the screw popped loose. He paused, panting, sweat dripping down his face. He armed it off, succeeded in smearing mud across his brow. Same process for the second screw, but more painful given the shredding beneath his nails. He got it halfway free, cursed with irritation, then hammered his fist against the wood near the flap of the hinge, knocking the entire lid loose. For several seconds he froze, listening for footsteps on the quartz gravel. Hearing none, he lowered the lid nearly flat to the dirt and slid it aside. Now, he had a straight view up to the bottom of the van. And to the trap door he'd instructed Tommy to make near the fuel filter between the right frame rail ahead of the rear axle. 4 latches undid the trap door. Now he had access to the hidden compartments beneath the cargo hold of the van. It would take a lot of heavy hauling for him to get the gear out and position it where needed. Time was short. And Darling Boy was waiting. Gripping the edges of the trapdoor, Evan hoisted his head up into the hold and took stock. For the first time in a long time, he allowed himself an exhale. 2 hours and 40 minutes later, Evan was on the verge of completing his last underground trek. He was drenched in sweat from running back at intervals to Darling Boy in the study. Every time he emerged, Nacho would shove him over the desk and pat him down from head to toe, while Darling Boy looked on with predatory delight. Then Evan would crawl back into the earth and sprint to make up time for the shadow operation he was running in place of the one he'd disclosed. The terminus of the tunnel was 2.25 miles from the estate. A dead sprint humping gear would give him barely enough time to get there and back in time for his next hourly check-in with Darling Boy. Rats skittered out from beneath Evan's boots as he ran, shouldering the black duffel he'd emptied out to make room for the actual gear he was using. The moist walls muffled their squealing, the sounds absorbed in the belly of the earth. Sporadic lengths of Christmas lights had shorted out, leaving him to run through pitch-black stretches. His boots heavied with mud, his clothes clung to him. The last outlet was a fake storm drain with a wheel on the underside resembling a dog handle on a submarine door. Dumping the duffel at the base of the ladder, Evan retrieved a loaded Ares 1911 and scaled the rungs with it in his teeth. It was a longer climb up, almost double the height of the others. Gauging from the walls, bored through solid stone, Evan assumed he'd made it out past the limestone formations to the carved rock before the highway. In the event of a raid on the estate, this was far enough from the mansion for Montesco to pop free and escape. Reaching the top, Evan spun the wheel to unlock the lugs and then stashed the Ares beneath the curved metal handle for safekeeping. He pushed the cover up, starting to emerge, when a boot set down, filling his visual field. A moment later, a stream of tobacco landed in the dirt right next to his cheek. He looked up into the face of Raudel, his favorite chauffeur. Raudel pulled the fake storm drain cover upright, easing behind it so he faced Evan over the top. If he let it fall, it would strike Evan in the face, sending him tumbling 40 feet to the bottom. Raudel pretended to let his grip slide, grabbing it just before it hit Evan. He laughed as Evan cringed. Whoops! If Raudel leaned forward a few inches, he'd see the pistol wedged on the underside of the lid. In fact, his fingertips were touching the aluminum slide. Setting an arm on the dirt, Evan had to contort his head to see the chauffeur over the top of the raised hatch. His view was limited, but he could see that he'd emerged on a rocky bluff overlooking the dirt road to the estate. And he made out a truck of some kind stashed beneath camo netting in the bushes at the edge of the clearing. Montesco's getaway vehicle, with a driver standing by at all times. "Filthy boy," Raudel said. Evan could feel it. Dirt crammed beneath his nails, in the creases of his eyelids, the cracks of his knuckles. "What are you doing way out here?" Raudel asked. Evan's extracurricular shenanigans had left him with scant time to get back to Darling Boy in the study. 2.25 miles in 19 minutes wasn't undoable, but any further delays and he'd be pushing it. The last thing he needed right now was an altercation. Safing the tunnels. Foolishly, Evan had left all the equipment he was supposed to be installing a mile back where he'd emptied the duffel bag. Fusion sensors with night vision and thermal, micro-surveillance pin cameras.
Micro-surveillance? Raudel spit again. Sounds like some white boy shit. Can I see it?
No, Evan said. That's the whole point. A drawn-out pause as Raudel squinted down at him. Beneath the wheel handle, the 1911 slid a bit, threatening to drop. Evan wondered if Raudel had felt it inch away from his fingertips. Raudel finally finished his internal translation and laughed. The motion shook the hatch lid slightly, the pistol barely holding on. If it fell, drawing Raudel's attention, all he'd have to do was let go of the hatch to send Evan plummeting.
"We done?" Evan said. "I've got work to do."
Raudel spit again, the brown juice splattering Evan's arm. Evan had repressed his OCD as best he could in the tunnel, but the tobacco-laced saliva on his skin brought it to the surface. Raudel blew him another kiss.
"Have fun, Gabacho."
He lowered the lid quickly enough to force Evan to scramble down out of its way. When it sealed with an airtight thunk, the Ares shot free,
Evan caught it before it fell and secured it back in place. Then he wiped his arm off. He'd been planning to hide the duffel on the surface, but there was no time for that now. He'd have to haul it up with him on the Exfil and deal with Raudel then. Less than optimal. He checked his watch fob. 17 minutes to get back to the study. He bounced down the rungs as quickly as he could, hitting the earth hard, his boots sinking in rat shit. Readying himself for the run, he spun around. Darling Boy was standing there, MP7 aimed at Evan's chest. He bared those awful yellow teeth, enamel stubs screwed into his suppurating gums. Surprise.
Chapter 54. Gun to a Knife Fight. Evan faced Darling Boy in the tunnel. Both of them stooped to accommodate the low roof. The arch of it seemed to crowd down over Evan's shoulders. Darling Boy was 5 feet away, too far for Evan to make a grab for the weapon.
I promised I would catch up to you, Gabacho, Darling Boy said.
A few rats darted past him tentatively, scaling the curved wall.
But you made a fatal mistake, Evan said.
Darling Boy grinned that terrible grin once more.
I made a mistake. I'm the one with the MP7.
Right. You brought a gun to a knife fight.
I don't think that's how the saying goes.
Fire that weapon and find out, Evan said.
This tunnel is minimally reinforced. You release a burst of rounds in here, you'll be buried alive.
Darling Boy licked his lips, a nervous tell.
Even so, you don't have a knife.
No, Evan said, but you do.
He charged. Darling Boy dropped the MP7 and grabbed for the fixed blade combat knife sheathed on his belt. But there were two problems he hadn't accounted for. The sling on the MP7 and the retaining strap on the leather knife sheath, both designed to secure the weapons on him. But in this case, they secured him to the weapons.
The submachine gun tangled at his waist, his hand fumbling at the strap.
Evan hit him in a high tackle, knocking him over, the MP7 flying up between them, smacking Darling Boy's jaw. Rolling through the mud, swinging and clubbing, Evan got in a few blows, grabbing for the knife at Darling Boy's waist, thumb digging at the metal snap. It popped free, Evan raking the blade up at Darling Boy's throat, getting a solid nick before a tumbling kick to the gut sent him flying up the tunnel. Evan landed on all fours, knees sunk in the mud, his fists still gripping the knife. 5 feet away, partly visible in the Christmas lights, Darling Boy clutched at his throat. A trickle of blood dribbled down his Adam's apple. It was bad, but not enough to kill him anytime soon. He lowered his hands and tried to say something, but all that came out was a hoarse rush of air. His larynx had been punctured. Darling Boy reached for his boot and came up with a straight razor, which he opened with a practiced flick of his wrist. Evan rose. They faced each other over their respective blades. Darling Boy lunged first. Evan dodged the thrust, bringing the combat knife around to slash at the distal biceps tendon at the elbow. Darling Boy tried to scream, but with his damaged throat it was little more than a rasp. His forearm would be going numb now, his grip useless. He looked down impotently as the weight of the straight razor peeled his fingers apart, and it started to tumble. He caught it with his left hand, wielding it unsurely now, panicked eyes reading Evan in the darkness. Another feint, but Evan rolled beneath the edge, blade angled to slide straight across the back of Darling Boy's ankle just above the throat of the boot where the Achilles tendon inserted into the calf. An airy moan as Darling Boy stumbled, catching himself against the muddy wall, ripping a string of Christmas lights free. The MP7 bobbled about his waist now, and he nearly tripped as he high-stepped out of it. He staggered upright, and he and Evan faced each other once more, their second do-si-do in the tight dirt walls.
A strand of the lights remained stubbornly on, casting low illumination across the muddy ground. Behind Darling Boy, dozens of red dots peered from the darkness. Rat eyes. Sensing their presence, Darling Boy put his shoulders to the wall, trying to keep Evan in sight as he glanced behind him. Another soundless moan of terror. Before he could reorient himself, Evan flashed past him once more, drawing the point of the combat knife across Darling Boy's left forearm, opening up a bone-deep gash. Darling Boy hissed, his breath pungent in the trapped air, the straight razor falling to the mud. He collapsed to grab it, digging frantically, his useless hands flapping at the ends of his arms. As Evan approached, Darling Boy lashed out with his functional leg, a heel kick to Evan's groin. Evan twisted aside and parried with the knife, swiping at Darling Boy's leg, cutting through his pants behind the knee. A wet snap as the lateral hamstring tendon gave way. That left the Sicario with no functional limbs. Darling Boy curled into a loose fetal position, gurgling into the dirt. One of the rats darted forward and nipped at his nose. Limbless, he jerked his face to scare it away, and it retreated. Eyes bulging, Darling Boy looked up at Evan. He tried to speak, but couldn't make words. Around him in the darkness came scurrying noises, barely audible high-pitched chirping, calls and responses. Shadows gathered on the floor just beyond Evan's vision. He took a step back. Darling Boy stared at him with pleading eyes, his jaws sawing on air. Using his chin, he tried to roll himself over. Trapped in this tunnel beneath the earth, stuck in the walls of his own body, voiceless. Much like the women he'd helped lock in the chicken coop. Evan took another step back, letting the Sicario fade into darkness. In the faint glow of the remaining lights, he sensed a flurry of motion and a wheezing that couldn't rise into words. Both sounds quickened to a fevered pitch, the bloodlust excitement of a feeding frenzy. Evan heard it echoing up the tunnel after him as he started the long sprint back. Chapter 55. Down. Nacho was waiting right where Evan expected him at the top of the scuttle hole in the study, peering down over the barrel of his MP7. Evan blinked up at him. "Can I come up?" "Where's Darling Boy?" "Helping me finish with the pin cameras," Evan said. "We just positioned them around the last hatch, so I have to grab an iPad from the van to test the connection. I think we might need a booster since the signal sucks down there." He grabbed the lower rungs to start up, but Nacho said, "Don't fucking move." Nacho fished out a phone, dialed a number, waited. "Straight to voicemail." "I told you. Shitty signal."
"I don't believe you."
"You're welcome to come down."
"He didn't say he would help you."
"This part requires two men."
"Hang on."
Nacho placed another call. Evan waited 20 feet down, soaked in sweat and mud, breathing the dampness. A few moments later, he heard a fleet of footsteps above.
"Show me your hands," Nacho said.
"Okay.
Come up slowly."
"Slower!" "Up. Up!" As Evan emerged, Nacho grabbed him by the shirt collar and flung him up against the desk. He hit it hard enough that the blotter skidded beneath the heels of his hands. There were three other men in the study, all toting MP7s, all aimed at him. Nacho frisked him toe to head and then head to toe, found nothing on him.
"Get your iPad. Move it."
He gave Evan a shove toward the door and Evan hustled out, leaving muddy heel prints. In every hallway and room, the guards watched him pass, raising their phones to their faces, communicating his progress each step of the way. In the corridor before the foyer, he hustled up the winding stairs to the second floor. The guard at the top blocked his path.
"What are you doing?"
"Need to check signal up here. See if it'll reach the second floor. Hefe will need reception in his bedroom. The guard protected his weapons and the grenade pouch as Evan slid past him in the narrow hall, heading for Angelina's room. Through a security door into the final hallway. The Mont Blanc fountain pen Evan had liberated from the desk blotter while being frisked rested comfortingly against the inside of his wrist beneath the cuff. His one-man raid on the Leonis headquarters in San Bernardino had started with a pencil. The exfil from Montesco's estate would begin with a pen. All the complexities Evan had been forging through this mission, fathers and daughters and mothers and babies and birthrights and betrayal. He froze in place, like bugs in amber, stacked them to the side. Now was the time for action, for moving forward, for the Ten Commandments and the clarity they brought. A plug of a guard sat on the chair outside Angelina's closed door, Glock 19 resting on his knee. At the sight of Evan, he found his feet. Without slowing or speeding up, Evan closed on him, letting the pen slide down his sleeve into his palm. A quick twist of thumb and forefinger and the cap came off, bounced at his feet. Confused, the guard stared at the cap pattering on the floor. As he looked up, Evan sank the fountain pen's tip into his left ear canal, punching it with his palm to sink the metal shaft deeper. He stripped the Glock from the guard's hand as he lowered his body silently to the floor. In through the door. Angelina and Raimundo stared at him unblinkingly. He was covered with grime, the floor behind him wet from the guard's emptied bladder. The heavy fabric of Evan's clothes, heavier than usual, was saturated with mud and sweat, tugging at his shoulders. He dropped the blood-tipped pen, the Glock 19 in his left hand, aimed at the floor. The 10th commandment, never let an innocent die, and its variant, never let an innocent kill, demanded that he keep them both out of the fray. "Follow me," he said in a low voice, snatching a pillow off the bed. "Follow everything I do. We have to be quiet. Until we don't." Angelina stared out the window into the front yard. Already guards were running confusedly back and forth, barking into their phones. A half-sentence reached them, snatched away by the wind. "Y dónde está, darling boy?" Evan said, "Now," snapping them from their trance. They stayed at his back, Angelina gasping as they stepped across the puddle around the fallen guard. Evan's boots moving up the corridor were sticky, making a moist sound as the soles peeled up. The security measures of the mansion, narrow halls, small doorways, tight staircases, were designed to deter intrusion. Now Evan could turn every last one of them to his advantage. Through the security door, the next guard moving toward them on alert, phone at his face, gun gripped loosely in his other hand. Evan wrapped his fingers over the slide of the Glock, a set of makeshift polymer knuckles, and struck him in the nose with the magazine base plate, straddled him on the floor, muzzle to pillow, pillow over face, muffled gunshot to the head, the smell of burned powder mixed with singed down stuffing. Barely breaking stride to the spiral stairs, Raimundo and Angelina breathing heavily at his back. Across the cramped landing, the security door to the facing hall flung open. Montesco reared up behind two guards, desperately trying to halt, his eyes showing white. They locked on Evan. A suspended instant as recognition dawned. El Moreno spotting his son and Angelina at Evan's back, the depth of treachery hitting him, his expression twisted with outrage. Evan brought the Glock up, but by the time he fired, the guards had heaved Montesco back, slamming the door, the rounds ricocheting off metal, making Evan's ears ring. Before they could regroup, he had to get his charges to the ground floor. His shouted command, "Go, go, go!" spurred them to action as he leapt onto the stairs, taking the lead. Skittering down, boots moving almost too fast for purchase, the foyer guard came visible, charging into the fray, MP7 at the ready. Whipping through the last curve of the stairs, Evan shot him twice in the chest, once in the face for good measure. The man jellied as Evan spun down onto the tile, catching the submachine gun and stripping it from the man as he collapsed out of the rifle sling. Evan got off a 3-round burst at the front door to give the outside guard something to think about, then glanced back at the stairs. Angelina and Raimundo cowered several steps up. The security door above, leading to Montesco's wing, was still shut, but not for long. Evan said, "Move." Vectoring toward the kitchen, incoming rounds already clipping the threshold, Evan sliced the pie, leading with the muzzle, ripping bullets through the chests of the two guards in the conversation pit. They jerked back onto the cushions, bodies dancing, weapons dropping. 5 down, 33 to go. And the dark man himself. Evan had taken splinters in the side of his neck from the frayed door jamb. He noted the burn, gauged it non-essential, turned down the volume of the pain. Pounding footsteps, shouts from above, outside. Evan hadn't slowed. He cut straight through the sunken pit, grabbing grenades and spare magazines from the dead men's pouches, another battlefield pickup as he headed to the rear of the mansion. Pulling pins, bouncing the frag grenades ahead of him through the intersecting back hallways. A wall shuddering explosion, 2 more guards eating shrapnel, the overpressure sending one flying up to strike the low ceiling. Confused sounds upstairs, yelling for El Moreno, shouted orders. Evan glanced back, caught Raimundo staring wide-eyed at the damage. Grabbing the young man by the sleeve, Evan yanked him forward, Angelina tripping to keep up. "Stay on my back." Montesco's men hadn't counted on a raid starting from within. The very architecture of the mansion prevented their mustering a mass response. Every hall was a fatal funnel, every door sized to accommodate one man at a time. Excellent safeguards. If that one man weren't Evan. And for the moment, Evan had a second advantage. They had to wait for target acquisition so they wouldn't fire at their colleagues or the jefe himself, whereas Evan could kill anyone who crossed his sights. But soon enough, they'd figure out his location and close in with numbers. He had to get below ground as quickly as possible. Angelina stumbled along, eyes glazed with shock. Raimundo was breathing hard enough to hyperventilate. Shouldering to the wall before the next corridor, Evan used one arm to press them flat beside him. Then he came around the next corner, MP7 raised. Down at the end, a trio of frozen men stared at him. Burst, burst. The manpower count dropping to 28. Hot brass bounced off the wall and stuck to his neck, a quick sting and then the smell of his own skin burning. He swept the scalding metal off, the wounds already cauterized. Barreling toward the study now, MP7 tight against his chest, muzzle pointed 45 degrees off his right foot, the couple at his back. Nacho's voice issued through the doorway, a desperate cell phone query. "Es jefe en camino al túnel?" Evan turned to Raimundo and Angelina, finger across his lips. Easing forward, heel to toe, heel to toe, the noise of his approach covered by sounds of screaming throughout the mansion. Next to the threshold, he raised the MP7 to his shoulder, barrel horizontal, then rolled past the doorway, sending a steady stream of rounds across the rear wall. The aquarium glass gave way with a whoosh, a tonnage of water sheeting through the study, smashing the desk and couches to the walls and knocking the men off their feet. It roiled through the room, sloshing through the doorway, nearly sweeping Angelina and Raimundo down the hall. Once the initial torrent slowed, Evan spun back through the doorway from the far side. One of the guards lay face down in the pooled water, floating beside the wing chair, his skull staved in at the temple from a collision with the overturned desk. Another pulled his head up, gasping and choking. Evan shot him through the neck and then waded in, stock seated at his shoulder, sighting down the top of the MP7. The third man had racked up against the wall, face studded with slivers of glass. Evan hit his torso with a 3-round burst. The tree trimmer's waterlogged corpse bucked and flopped in the far corner. Evan stared at it curiously, until Nacho rolled out from beneath and heaved himself to his feet, sputtering and yelling. He'd lost his weapons in the deluge. Nacho panted, mouth agape, teeth protruding. His eyes were weary, resigned. The desk drifted past, sliding on a skein of water. An MP7 tangled on the corner. Nacho lunged for it, and Evan shot him through the chest. Nacho tumbled back to sit on the ledge of the aquarium, splayed awkwardly as if balanced on a swing, legs dangling. His bottom lip turned down, wet and fat. His foot jiggled twice. His eyes had depth in them. And then they did not. Evan pivoted back to the open door. Angelina and Raimundo stared inside with crazed expressions. "What do we do now?" Angelina cried. "Where do we go?" The scuttle hatch was open, water draining through the hall. Evan pointed. Down. Chapter 56. Front Toward Enemy. The rungs were slick and moist, and the damp hall stank of decaying flesh from the tank water. Evan sent Angelina and Raimundo first and slid down after them. When he struck dirt, his boots sank to the ankles. He shouldered past them into the lead, sprinting, mud flying up and splattering their clothes. A length of Christmas lights shorted out at his side, a dying fizzle illuminating a fleet of confused rats as they fled or tried to burrow into the walls. Aquarium stench mingled with silt and rat feces, gumming his soles. As Evan and the couple ran through the tunnel, muffled shouts reached them through the earth above. He'd embedded fusion sensors in the muddy walls and pin cameras at intervals along the ground, a mesh Wi-Fi signal that transmitted to his room zone. At a quarter mile, they passed the first ladder, their breath amplified in surround sound off the walls. Another eternity passed before the second hatch flew by overhead. The quality of noise shifted behind them, distorted voices rumbling. Some of the guards had entered the tunnel. Angelina tripped, went down with a yelp, found her footing and kept on. Raimundo lagged back with her as Evan sprinted ahead. They had to reach the terminus before Montesco's men, or they'd be trapped. For a moment, Evan was worried he'd somehow overrun the third escape hatch, but finally spotted a rise of rungs glinting in the semi-darkness. He leapt onto them and scurried up the claustrophobic chute, popping his head out like a groundhog. His position beneath the van's undercarriage gave him a good vantage onto the driveway and portico. A dozen guards stirring around on the quartz rock like penned livestock. Montesco appeared at the door, screaming orders.
Muevan sus culos! Hay que chingarlos de los dos lados!
Evan's gaze moved to the chicken coop. Aurora stood in the cell, hands wrapped around the bars, the skeleton key pegged on the pillar just out of reach. To the side, near the slot in the door, the extendable undercarriage mirror waited. Even from this distance, Evan saw her eyes move to it.
"They're coming for us," Angelina screamed up from the base of the rungs. "What's going on?"
"They're trying to beat us to the end of the tunnel," Evan called down.
"It's too far," Raimundo cried. "We can't outrun the SUVs."
In the thin slice Evan's view afforded him, he watched the men pile into the three waiting SUVs, four to a vehicle. Montesco sprinted for the rear SUV when the first two started up and detonated with a thunderous blast. Flashes of violent orange from the fuel tanks, black billowing smoke rocketing skyward. The blast knocked Montesco back onto his ass on the portico. He held an arm against the heat, screaming at the remaining men,
"Stop! Stop!"
When Evan had been ostensibly checking the SUVs for bugs earlier, he'd wired encrypted transmitters to the fuse boxes at the side of the steering columns. Each chirper linked to a microchip receiver kicker on the quarter-size patch of C4 he'd adhered to the inside of the gas tank's flap. Eight more pieces off the chessboard brought the manpower count to 20. The four survivors spilled out of the intact SUV, regrouping with Montesco at the porch.
"Trae los camiones de combate," Montesco screamed. "Ahora!"
Combat trucks. The words hit Evan's bloodstream like adrenaline.
He didn't know about the trucks. If Montesco's crew commanded a second fleet and drove to the extraction point before Evan and the couple reached it, they'd be dead in the ground.
Dirt trickled past Evan, the escape hatch starting to crumble from the explosion's aftermath. The rung beneath his left hand gave way, one side rattling free of its concrete base. He swung one-handed, toes digging until they locked on the lower rungs. Then he half-slid, half-fell the rest of the way, nearly striking Raimundo as he tumbled the last 10 feet. Landing on shins and knees, left hand bent backward beneath the wrist, mouth full of dirt. Silt trickled from the curved ceiling. A sheet of wall dribbled down in front of them, a partial cave-in.
Evan spit, rose. We need to hurry.
They scrambled over the loose dirt, the sounds of approaching men growing closer. Behind them, a burst of fire strobed the throat of the tunnel, the starburst muzzle flare a quarter mile back.
The earth creaked and groaned, a supporting 2x4 fraying and then giving way with a wet snap.
More shouted voices, the men screaming at one another not to shoot.
Evan led the way, swiping sweat and grime from his eyes. He had his phone out, the feed up, counting bodies as they flashed by the surveillance cameras behind them. 5 men in the tunnel. Wait. More forms strobed past the first pin camera. At a dead sprint, Evan counted the additional shadows. 1, 2, 3. Before his shoulder nicked the wall and almost sent him tumbling. He shoved the phone into a cargo pocket and picked up the pace. The men seemed to be gaining, but Evan focused only on the run ahead. If he could reach the final escape hatch before Montesco's vehicle convoy, they still had a shot. It seemed an eternity, the tunnel telescoping before them, ever receding as if in a nightmare.
But at last he spotted what was left of Darling Boy, rags and gleaming bones.
Evan hurdled the body and reached the last set of rungs. The heavy duffel bag waited at the base where he'd left it. When he glanced back over Raimundo and Angelina's shoulders, he could see shadows thrown around the bend just behind them. He reached for the duffel with both hands, grimaced against the pain in his left hand. He'd sprained the wrist badly in the fall.
"I can't carry the duffel up," he told Raimundo. "I need you to take it."
Raimundo shouldered it, staggering under its weight.
"I have to climb with this?"
"Yes." Angelina pulled close, and Evan grabbed her with his good hand, yanking her tight to him. "Don't step there."
She looked down at the convex green-gray plastic case peeking out from where Evan had embedded it earlier, at the base of the muddy dead end. 3 words embossed in all caps, "Front toward enemy." She eased out of breath, minded where she stood.
Evan scaled the rungs, using his good hand and the elbow of his left arm. Angelina climbed at his heels, Raimundo bringing up the rear, grunting with every movement.
Halfway up, boring through stone walls, Evan peered down. Flashlight beams played across the hole below, jerking back and forth as the guards neared. He quickened his pace, crabbing his way up with one hand and an elbow. Mouth gone dry, bitter taste in his throat, pain screaming in his wrist. Up, up, up the rabbit hole. He reached the base of the hatch, the Ares 1911 wedged beneath the circular handle where he'd left it. His shooting hand was compromised, so he freed the gun with his right hand. Even in the wrong hand, it felt like home. Below, Raimundo was barely holding on, the weight of the duffel pulling on him. The shouted voices from the tunnel grew closer yet, the flashlight glow intensifying. They were down to seconds. Evan leaned past Angelina and whispered hoarsely to Raimundo, "When I knock, shout up. Pretend you're one of the guards." Wedging his left elbow into the top rung, Evan curled his fist around the pistol grip and pounded the bottom of the fake storm drain 3 times. His voice strained beyond recognition from exertion. Raimundo shouted up, "Somos nosotros! Apúrate! Abre la chingada escotilla!" The hatch cracked, the cover peeling up. A clear view of Raudel peering down, backlit by a beautiful blue sky. Evan shot him through the chin. He tumbled back, Evan taking the weight of the hatch lid with his shoulders. He heaved upward, flinging the cover open.
Flipping onto his knees, he hoisted Angelina up, ripping her free of the rungs. She kicked in the open air, one shoe spiraling down. He flung her to safety. She rolled a few times on the rocky bluff, stopping herself at the edge of the sheer drop leading to the dirt road below. Raimundo and the overburdened duffel clogged most of the chute, but in the gaps around him, Evan saw faces appear way down at the bottom. Guards staring up, trying to determine who and what they were seeing. Raimundo was three rungs down, just out of reach. The duffel strained on his shoulder. Evan lowered flat to his stomach, reaching for it. Raimundo's fingers slipped on the rungs. He grimaced and tightened his grip. The bag was straining on Raimundo's shoulder, the strap starting to pull through the buckle. Raimundo's face was red, his neck shot through with veins. Below, the men were shouting, arguing among themselves. One of the guards started up. Evan slid forward on his stomach, the bag still out of reach. "I got you." That deep, feminine voice from behind him, suddenly cool and collected. He felt Angelina grab his belt with both hands, letting him dip his torso farther into the hole. He caught the strap just as it was on the verge of unthreading from the buckle and hurled the weighty bag up onto level ground. Raimundo scrabbled up the last rungs, heaving himself out onto the baking dirt as a volley of bullets erupted in his wake. Sprawled flat on his back, Evan swung around on the pivot of his hip and kicked the hatch shut, thumbed up his room zone and the grainy surveillance feed from the pin cameras. Seven guards clustered at the base of the chute, one on the rungs. Evan switched apps to bring up the red virtual button that would detonate the mine below. The Vietnam-era claymore that Tommy had acquired for him would spray hundreds of steel ball bearings in a 60-degree arc, fanning out to 100 meters and aerating the minimally reinforced walls. Evan pressed his thumbprint to the screen. A deep rumble, and the earth heaved beneath them as if suppressing a cough. The hatch lid blew straight up, flying high and then bouncing off the stone a good 30 feet away. At their side, a trough opened up in the earth, tumbling inward, rock and dirt churning in a straight line as if run through with an invisible plow. The destruction snaked back in the direction of the estate, not a full cave-in, but an implosion of silt and rock disrupting the limestone formations adjacent to the road below. 11 men left, and Montesco. Raimundo coughed out a single note of relief. Angelina tipped her forehead into her hands. A moment of silence, and then the roar of engines in the distance. Zooming into view around the sweeping turn leading to the estate, five pickup trucks beelined toward them along the strip of intact dirt road. Three clicks away, maybe a bit more. Raimundo let out a low groan. Angelina's voice came weak and warbling. "Oh, no." Toyota Hilux 4x4s, fat posts welded to the beds, pintle mounts with general-purpose machine guns, likely Fabrique Nacional M240 Bravos. Montesco stood in the back of the last one, wind riffling his crazy hair. He'd brought the war machines. Chapter 57, The Killing Alley. Evan scrambled to the duffel bag, unzipped it, and took out the big gun. The 50 cal Barrett was a recoil-operated anti-materiel semi-automatic. Tommy had outfitted it with a muzzle brake to redirect propellant gases to counter recoil and unwanted muzzle rise. A few spare magazines for Evan's Aries lay in the duffel, along with a scattering of 10-round box mags, steel-coated with Cerakote. Evan had specified that they be loaded with armor-piercing rounds sufficient to get him through conventional reinforced windshields, and that every fifth round should be a green tracer so he could adjust his aim once vehicles entered the choke point of the rock walls a half mile away. The 10th and final round was a red tracer that would signal a magazine change. What Evan hadn't accounted for was a fleet of Toyota pickups outfitted like an ISIS brigade. They were closing distance fast, nearing the killing alley. He was out of time.
Shoving spare pistol magazines into his cargo pockets and hauling an armload of box mags, he lay on his belly at the edge of the cliff, setting down the black plug of the monopod to stabilize the weapon. The dominoes had ticked over one at a time, charting the course from a fountain pen to the large caliber rifle before him. For better or worse, he'd reached the end of the run. His sprained left wrist wouldn't be able to take the recoil, so he'd have to shoot right-handed. He made the adjustments, finding his position, the sun-baked earth cooking through his shirt, warming his belly. One motion to flip open the rear and front scope covers, tug the bolt back, and let it fly forward to chamber the first round. Box mags at his side, cheek to the barrel, eye to the loophole scope, he adjusted the illuminated reticle so that it was faintly visible against the rock walls. Angelina and Raimundo waited behind him. "How can we help?" she asked. "Stay down. Plug your ears," Evan said, "and don't talk." He watched the grill of the lead pickup, magnified to 8x. It weaved to dodge a cracked strip of road from the collapsed tunnel. The other vehicles followed its lead, a sidewinder undulating. The convoy entered the funnel, high rock walls crowding in on either side. Evan had a clear angle down on the first windshield, the trucks driving nearly straight at him, easing out a breath, attuning to his heartbeat, holding, holding, holding. He wanted all five trucks in the constriction before he opened up. Safety off, slack out of the trigger, waiting for the stillness between heartbeats, for all five trucks to slot within the walls of stone. And then they were. He opened up, grouping the rounds into the lead windshield, recoil rippling through his bones. The bullet-resistant glass spiderwebbed and then gave way, the driver disappearing in a haze of pink mist. The pickup veered right, clipped the stone wall, then swerved back, somersaulting. The guard manning the machine gun in the bed ragdolled onto the road, crushed beneath the axle of the following truck. The second Toyota impaled itself on a limestone abutment, hurling the driver through the windshield, his body weight ripping the bullet-resistant shield from the frame. A pile-up, trucks skidding and crashing, men scrambling from the wreckage. Angelina cried out. Without moving his head, Evan said, "Don't look." He picked off the men spilling out of the vehicles, a head losing its dome. A chest giving way, an arm severed at the shoulder flying free. He was in the zone, his muscles remembering the rhythm of the semi-automatic Barrett. Press trigger, recoil jabbing back like a sparring partner in the ring. Inhale. Let the muzzle settle. Exhale long and smooth. Press trigger once more. His shots were 4 to 5 seconds apart, each round finding flesh or a vulnerable part of a truck. There was no cover inside the sheer rock walls. The Barrett was getting warm, sending slight heat mirages through his scope. A tracer round came next, Evan pulling his cheek off the stock, watching it fly all the way to target, a brilliant green trail. He made a micro-adjustment, zeroing in on the gas tank of the second truck, the rifle bucking against his shoulder. The round hit, the explosion amplified in the stone chasm. Everyone from the first two pickups was wiped out. The third tumbled end over end from the blast, flinging the men free. One wore a suit of flame, running sporadically, fire licking up his torso, rising off his shoulders. Evan tried to put him down, but missed, and then he ran into a rocky ledge and fell still. The fourth pickup was boxed in, smoldering trucks in front of it, Montesco's pickup pinning it in from behind. The men were petrified, looking up the steep walls, trying to source the ambush. The driver hopped out to make a break, and Evan shot him through the kidney and scapula. He landed with a skid, plowing up a wake of dust. Evan hit the passenger through the open side window, then snapped around through the chest of the guard manning the mounted machine gun on the bed. He flew back as if clotheslined, bouncing off the reinforced windshield of Montesco's truck. Through the scope, Evan followed his movement. The reticle landed on Montesco in the bed of the last truck, standing firm behind the mounted Fabrique Nationale M240 Bravo. and aiming directly at Evan. Evan flung himself to the side an instant before the cliff edge exploded. The rocky lip turned to shrapnel. The Barrett flew up, cartwheeling end over end through the air. Tracer rounds worked both ways, in this case giving up Evan's position. At the rear of the convoy, Montesco had been offset enough from the line of fire to backtrack the pyrotechnic flare to Evan's sniper perch. The incoming rounds didn't cease, 650 per minute chewing the bluff to pieces, sending Evan rolling backward on the ground away from the edge. Blood ran into his eyes. A chip of stone had split his right brow, a stinging surface pain. Angelina and Raimundo cowered behind the storm drain hatch, Raudel's body splayed at their side. "What now?" Angelina shouted. Evan pulled himself toward them with his forearms, chinning at Montesco's getaway vehicle beneath the camo netting. Finally, he was out of the machine gun's sightline. But that didn't stop the 7.62x51 NATO rounds from peppering the bluff relentlessly behind him. He found his feet, risked a peek over the edge. Montesco's driver backed up, nosed forward, four-wheeling his way over corpses and wreckage, lurching the pickup through the choke point. The last two men alive, coming for them. Evan ripped the camo netting off the vehicle. A Ford F-150, just like Evan's. Big tires, good clearance. Maybe he and Montesco were Cornelis, after all. Evan slid behind the wheel, the familiar leather seat fitting him like a glove. Angelina dove into the back, Raimundo hopping into the passenger seat. Evan called up Google Earth on his room zone, brought up the holographic display, and then flipped the phone to stick against the windshield just below his eyes. It projected a 3D rendering of the rocky bluffs, the limestone formations, the dirt road below. Swiping at the blood streaming from his forehead, he punched the gas, rocking them out from the stand of brush, eyeing the virtual map to find a path off the stone rise to the highway below. He heard a ripping of fabric, and then a strip of cloth whipped around his forehead, cinched tight in the back as Angelina knotted it, a makeshift bandana to staunch the bleeding. The truck rocked violently down the treacherous slope, threatening to capsize. A limestone outcropping gouged the passenger side, snapping off the mirror. A dead tree branch screeched along the roof. He fumbled his Ares out and into the cup holder, then grabbed the wheel with both hands, his injured wrist screaming. He fought the Ford down the rocky face, blazing his way to level ground. The treacherous descent reached nearly 30%, too much for even a truck as fine as the F-150, and they joggled down the uneven slope, banging the earth at the bottom with the bumper. The truck shuddered forward, bulldozing up a spray of dirt, and then the mud terrain tires found purchase, leveling them out. Too much momentum to stop. Evan could barely steer. On the verge of losing control, he skidded along the edge of a boulder before the truck found its balance. He exhaled through clenched teeth, holding steady as the truck whipped forward, narrowly dodging limestone formations. The dirt road flashed into view ahead between two rocky rises. Wrenching the wheel, Evan aimed for the gap. Raimundo yelled as they skidded sideways onto the dirt road and slammed into the Toyota pickup careening up to meet them. Side by side, staring at each other, the driver's eyes flared wide, Montesco in the bed, legs spread for balance, knuckles bloodless, gripping the massive machine gun. Clawing the wheel with his injured left hand, Evan grabbed the Ares with his right, whipping it to aim across the cabin. Raimundo jerked back against the headrest. Evan shot out the passenger window, firing into the driver's window of the neighboring truck. Three rounds. Four. The bullet-resistant glass holding on. Evan was firing Black Hills honey badgers, machined out of a solid bar of copper, their noses milled to look like the front of a drill bit. It was only a matter of time. Montesco screamed, staggering as the trucks jockeyed. He set his base once more, bringing the muzzle of the massive FN M240 Bravo around. If he fired on them from this proximity, he'd turn them into confetti. Evan shot again and again at the driver's window, aiming for the weakened glass. The last round punched through, the driver's head jerking back, the pickup starting to coast away, just as Montesco brought the mounted machine gun to bear. Evan hit the brakes as Montesco opened up, the round strafing the hood of the Ford and then the road ahead of them. The pickup skidded off, the driver lolling lifelessly behind the wheel. White-knuckling the steering wheel, Evan felt his left hand giving out. He went for a one-handed reload with his right, thumbing the catch, dropping the empty mag. New one from his cargo pocket, end against his thigh, slamming the open mag well of the Ares's grip down on top of it. He dug the rear sight into the steering wheel and pushed forward, cycling the slide and chambering the first round. The Ford was fishtailing on the road now, so he pumped the brakes. The hood was smoking, the front right tire unspooling from the axle, shedding strips of tread and reeking of burned rubber. The left front wheel disintegrated also, the truck bucking forward to skid on the axles, throwing up plumes of sparks. Evan slammed into the dash, the Ares skipping from his grip. The truck slid sideways, and at long last rocked to a stop.
Groaning, he tugged at his door and fell out onto the scorching road. Raimundo and Angelina exited more gracefully, running to his side, pulling him to his feet. Her shirt was torn at the hem from where she'd liberated the strip of fabric to stem his bleeding. Montesco's pickup had vanished into a cloud of dirt on the verge. "He crashed," Angelina said. Evan didn't take his eyes from the shifting haze. "My gun," he said. "Where's my gun?" The dust tornado undulated and respired nightmarishly, like something living. Sure enough, the swirling grit took form around the outline of a man. Montesco emerged. A flap of his scalp had lifted, painting one side of his face red. His left shoulder hung low and looked to be dislocated. The machine gun was back with the truck, no doubt demolished, and he appeared to be unarmed. But despite his injuries, he was moving capably, lips snarled with rage. Behind Evan, Angelina said, "No." Her voice was trembling, breaking with emotion. Her beauty receded behind a facade of horror, and for a moment, Evan misunderstood her fear. Then he shifted to see Raimundo holding his Ares, aiming with a shaking hand at his father. Evan angled toward Raimundo while holding the dark man in his peripheral vision. The head wound bled like hell, turning El Moreno's face into a mask of crimson. With dust billowing behind him, he looked like he'd crawled out of hell. Evan's mind raced, the 10th commandment on a manic loop. Evan said, "Angelina, get behind the truck." She said, "Raimundo, please, everyone, just quiet." Raimundo's features had changed, turning flat, almost lifeless, the blank face of trauma. Angelina looked at Evan. He gestured, and she eased back to safety. He held a hand out to Raimundo, showing him an open palm. "If you pull that trigger, you can never take it back." "I don't want to take it back." Raimundo's teeth were clenched, his face quivering. "A lifetime. My lifetime. Hour after hour being terrorized by him." 30 yards away, the dark man halted in the center of the road, glowering at the trio. His bloody lips moved. "Hour after hour trying to shape you into a man. And look at you. Look at you now. Still a scared and useless little..." Raimundo's upper lip peeled back, his grip firming. Evan stepped in front of him. "Wait, just..." Raimundo fired into Evan's chest. Chapter 58. All the Troubles and Promise of the World. Evan felt the rib break, a snap he sensed all the way down to his feet. He looked down. The shirt had bunched around the bullet. He was clutching the point of impact, left side 3 inches down from the breast.
fatal placement. He felt his knee buckle, but he firmed it, keeping his feet. From behind the truck, Angelina was screaming. Raimundo stared at him in horror, his mouth agape, the Ares dangling loosely in his hand.
I didn't mean to.
Evan's hand rolled away from his chest. On the flat of his palm, a flattened .45 auto slug still hot, its end mushroomed from impact with the shirt he'd asked Tommy to supply. Its fabric woven from the same carbon nanotubes used to make flexible body armor. He'd known it was lab-tested and highly effective against low-caliber rounds. He'd had no idea it could possibly hurt this much. Thank God he'd reloaded the Ares with conventional hollow points. One of the honey badgers would have bored straight through his torso. He coughed, felt it through his entire skeleton. Pain was good. Pain told him he was still alive. No pain was not good. No pain meant he was dead. The round tumbled from his hand, plinking down into the dirt at his feet. He tried to take a breath, but his intercostals weren't having it. Raimundo was poleaxed, his expression migrating to sheer wonder, as if he'd just witnessed something from the pages of a comic book. Evan managed to lift his right hand and strip the gun away before Raimundo could do any more harm with it. Raimundo's eyes shifted to look over Evan's shoulder, his dark pupils dilating suddenly. Adrenaline dump. Fear. Evan dropped him onto the ground, a heel strike to the sternum, then dove at a 45-degree angle off the mark, somersaulting over his shoulder, pain screaming through his ribcage. He felt the wake of a bullet skim up his spine, sensed the heat and the riffle of the slipstream, heard the second crack as he finished the rotation, second bullet sailing overhead, landing flat on his back, his head to the threat, aiming the Ares behind him. The sight picture was upside down. Montesco holding a Glock 19 in an impressive modified Weaver stance. He'd fired twice for a double tap, and the slide had kicked back, interfering with his target acquisition. He needed a split-second recalibration to reset, to gauge Evan's new position and low profile, to determine whether Evan had been hit as he appeared to be. But Montesco didn't have a split second. As Jack used to say, the gun runs just as well upside down. Evan pressed the trigger, stitching the dark man from crotch to throat, 6 rounds into the torso, the 7th through the bridge of the nose. Montesco remained on his feet for a moment, standing like a zombie. Then he toppled. Evan let his senses flood back in, a sumptuous array of pains, taste of dirt and blood, the padding of Angelina's footfalls somewhere behind him, and then the sound of her sobbing with relief. He rolled himself onto his boots with a groan and looked at them, clutching each other there in the road, dirty faces burnished by the midday sun. Where she'd torn her shirt, her belly protruded. She was holding Raimundo's cheek to her chest and staring up at Evan. And he just looked at them there, a wildly imperfect family of almost 3, with all the troubles and promise of the world before them. She must have sensed something in his expression because she said, "What?" He rolled his bottom lip between his teeth, spit once to clear the taste of dirt. "Nothing." He started the long walk to the meet point. A few seconds later, he heard them rise to follow. Chapter 59. Homecoming. Evan couldn't believe it when he saw the men screech up in the Jeep Wrangler. Special Ed and Kiki spilling out from either door. Kiki tripping and nearly rolling onto his rotund belly. They ran to Angelina and embraced her. They pulled apart, Kiki kissing her hand with avuncular warmth. "You scared the shit out of your father, Nina."
"Out of you too," Eduardo said to Kiki. "Look at you, all crying and shit."
I'm not crying. Just got grit in my eye.
Evan said, Aragorn promised to send his best men. Kiki threw his arms wide.
Here we are.
I'm going to have to talk to him about quality control. The men smirked. Raimundo stepped forward, offering his hand.
Not yet, motherfucker, Eduardo said, turning to indicate the jeep. You ride in the back.
Evan hobbled toward the wrangler, stooped to favor his left side.
Someone needs to go back to the estate to check on the women, Angelina said. The captives.
Special Ed said, once we're closer to the border, we'll call in the Federales. Tell them it's safe.
And the lion, Evan said. They need to take care of him, too.
A lion?
Special Ed shook his head.
Fucking cartel.
Eduardo and